Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Ray Belli, and this is Words for Granted. If you value this podcast as a free educational resource, you can support the show and get access to past bonus episodes by making a monthly donation at patreon.com/wordsforgranted. Thanks to Omar, Maja, Chad, and Andro for their recent contributions. If Patreon's not your thing, but you still want to support the show, you can make a one-time donation at paypal.me/wordsforgranted. All right. Let's get straight into this conversation all about language learning. Rob Patterson, thank you for joining us on this interview episode of Words for Granted.
No, thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
So you are a linguist and one of the content production managers at Memrise. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, every guest that comes on this show, we basically start the conversation exactly the same way, which is give us sort of the SparkNotes version of your history in linguistics, starting with how you became interested in it, and then, you know, some of your academic and professional achievements after that.
Yeah. So I was always interested in languages from ever since I was a little boy. I had these little books for teaching yourself languages as a kid, and I just love them. I remember we went on holiday to Spain when I was about four, and I found out that in Spain they don't call Spain Spain, they call it España. And from that day I was just mind blown and a little bit disappointed that my parents couldn't instantly teach me all of Spanish. So then I just spent my time, my whole childhood and teenage years, just teaching myself all the languages that I could get any kind of books for. I studied modern languages at Southampton University and then ended up teaching languages, traveling and teaching English and other languages, then writing curricula for teaching Spanish, and eventually ended up at Memrise, where I am now and have been for the past five and a half years. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So I guess the first thing that kind of jumps out at me is, like, you know, someone who, like, basically always knew what they wanted to do, right? You're like a child, yeah. You became obsessed with languages. You're teaching these to yourself. I think, you know, I've spoken to a handful of people that have, you know, basically shared the same story, and they've wound up on the academic side, you know, like very much like ivory tower trajectory. And so I'm wondering, you know, working in like a modern product, like for a language learning app, is that something that you had envisioned for yourself? And I guess tell me what dissuaded you from, you know, pursuing a traditional academic path?
Yeah. I think, it's a great question. I love languages and talking to people and learning their languages through just getting out there in the wild and just learning as many languages as possible is kind of the fun in it for me. And the linguistics is kind of like an extra. Like, I learn so much linguistics through learning languages and getting to know more languages and learning how these different structures and things work and all of that super nerdy stuff through language learning. And so I think for me, the reason I didn't end up going into like academia was because I was automatically just finding all of this, reading all of this research and linguistic stuff anyway, but also just had this craving to get out and leave university and go and find languages to learn out in the world and meet people and speak to them and try out things that I'd learned and all of that.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I myself have a similar personality, which is why I think I have the podcast as opposed to, you know, going back to school and getting a master's in linguistics and publishing academic articles. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, we need those academics to be doing that work 100%. But just in terms of my own personality, I love reaching a broader audience and connecting with listeners. And I'm more of a generalist anyway. So, yeah, I can totally relate to that. But anyway, moving on, you mentioned that before you joined Memrise, you were making Spanish curricula. So were those for textbooks or online courses? Just tell us a bit about what that work was, because I think that will segue nicely into your current work. And actually, while you're at it, just kind of tell us what goes into building a curriculum in the first place.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. So I was working for a company called the Callan Method Organization. And the Callan Method is a method of teaching originally English in a very specific way that I think suits a lot of learners well and not so much others maybe. But I think for those who it works well, it works very well for. And it's very teacher-centered, where the classes are based around a bunch of questions and answers that go in a very systematic and progressive way to kind of take you from knowing nothing in the language to high level. So I was teaching English with the method originally, and then I ended up getting a job with the Callan Method Organization to rewrite the method to teach Spanish instead, which was great. It was a really good experience, and I think it set me up very well for the work that I do at Memrise, but in ways that I think are maybe hard to link directly, or it's kind of hard to explain, I think, because they're so different, where the way that we approach things in the Callan Method is very systematic and progressive. But in Memrise, we think of our curriculum more in terms of what do different users need and want in their language learning individually. So everybody has a different life, everybody has different interests, and that is the same when it comes to learning a language, right? Not everybody is going to want to learn or need to learn all of the same things in a new language, but so many traditional approaches to teaching are very focused on just the teacher has an idea of what you need to know and you learn that. And in Memrise, we try to focus a lot more on giving learners the options to learn what they want and to find their own kind of motivation in what is it that you want to learn, and then just learn that without any restrictions on, yeah, but you don't know the subjunctive yet, so you can't actually learn to talk about this specific thing that you're actually interested in.
Right. So I want to talk about how that approach contrasts with that of Memrise, but before we get to Memrise, I still want to kind of like lay the groundwork here for what actually goes into designing a curriculum on a more granular level. Because, you know, when you're a kid in school or an adult in school learning a second language in a traditional classroom format, you're basically given a textbook, or, you know, you're given a curriculum that's curated by the teacher, and they may or may not have actually made that curriculum up themselves. They may have modeled it off of some other existing thing. And I think what I'm getting at here is, can you really quantify what should or should not be in a curriculum in the traditional sense of the word? Because I actually think that the modern innovation that we get with language learning apps is that, you know, we get to customize the experience or the quote-unquote curriculum a little bit more, and that's really interesting. And I'm sure you have opinions on this, if it's better or worse or neither, just different. But before we move on to Memrise's approach, I still want you to kind of lay this groundwork of traditional curriculum design. Like, what goes into building a curriculum?
So this is a really interesting point, I think, because there's a lot of different things that can be meant by a curriculum, right?
Sure.
And it also depends on the sort of mode of teaching, or whether it's classroom-based or if it's an app. All of these different methods can kind of do different things, or if it's one-on-one teacher, like sort of informal tutoring. but also the focus of what it is that you're teaching, right? Because I think traditionally there's this idea that in order to learn a language, you need to learn all the rules, all of the conjugations, all of the declensions. And once you know enough of those things, it's like, snap your fingers and you know the language, congratulations. Whereas I don't think we have that same kind of view with things like, I don't know, learning a musical instrument, for example, right? Most people wouldn't expect that you can learn all the notes on a piano and then suddenly you're able to play wonderful jazz music or whatever it might be.
Sure. Wait, I'm actually going to just jump in. Hold your thought, because this is something I can actually speak to personally quite well, because in my non-words for granted life, I am a professional musician, and I will say there are sort of varying teaching methodologies, especially like informally, like if you're taking private lessons. But I would say that the naive teachers, shall we call them, have this idea of you learn all of these like building blocks in isolation. You learn all this like technical stuff, and then boom, suddenly you're a good musician. I'm very attracted to, and this is also why I'm attracted to linguistics. Like, I am attracted to the technical, nerdy, foundational things and thinking about them and you know, deploying them in real world circumstances. But if you just learn them in isolation and you have no like contact with actual music and learning songs and identifying, oh, this rudiment or this beat, I'm a drummer, so I'm using drums as an example, this beat or this kind of like drum fill applies here, here's an example of them, here's 30 examples of this like fundamental technique, then you understand what it is. If you don't have that, then it's like, okay, you have all this technical knowledge, but you don't play the instrument, you probably sound like a robot. So anyway. I just wanted to throw that in there anecdotally.
No, that's exactly right, and I think that's one of the key things, right, is that our brains are built to recognize patterns and to filter things out by kind of frequency of exposure, right? Mm. So the things that we see more of, our brains kind of go, ah, that's probably quite important. I should make some solid connections and solidify that memory, right? And it's the same kind of thing with language learning. And I think there's a key difference also between knowledge and skill, where what we're kind of talking about is that skill of being able to play music or being able to speak a language. And traditionally, those two things are kind of equated as the same thing. You learn your vocab and your grammar rules, and then somehow that process of transferring that into a skill is often overlooked or kind of brushed aside a bit.
I love that. That's sort of a profound and obvious underrated, profound, and obvious distinction, kind of, I think.
Agreed, yeah.
Okay, so tell us now a little bit about Memrise. We have finally arrived. Tell us what you now do there. And actually, maybe before you do that, tell us a bit about the app itself and what sort of sets it apart from other language learning products.
Yeah. One of the main things that we're trying to do at Memrise is to bring in a bunch of that stuff that we've just talked about, right? So thinking about not only all of those little words and rules and things that people do still want to learn and need to learn, but also giving people that exposure to the language, to seeing these different words and structures in different contexts in order to really build that skill of processing the language in a different way. So it's kind of learning those words and phrases and immersing yourself in the language enough to get those words and phrases and grammar structures into your brain on a deeper level. And then the third thing is, recently we've been doing a bunch of exciting stuff with GPT-3, which I know everybody's talking about at the moment, where we're creating these chatbots so that people can also get that practice in expressing themselves and trying things out and playing with the language in a much more free way than you could with an actual speaker of the language or a teacher, where there's that sense of, am I doing it right? Or am I making myself understood? Whereas to a bot, you can sort of say anything and be as ridiculous as you want, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so let's pause here. Let's back up a sec. So just for anyone who may not know, what is ChatGPT technology, and how does that exactly work for the user?
Yeah, so it's an exciting new AI language model, which essentially allows you to speak to a computer and simulate conversations in an incredibly natural way. So to give a bit of extra context, when I first started in the company at Memrise, we were creating chatbots and we were scripting them out and trying to cater for a variety of different responses from the learner and trying to make these interesting. And they were a nightmare because it was just so much to kind of script and to cater for all of these different things and make sure there aren't any bugs and all of this stuff. And we ended up sort of parking that for however many years it's been now. And now technology has kind of come along so far that we can now just have a computer do this for us. We don't need to script things anymore. People can actually have what feels like a very real conversation with another person just within the app in Spanish and practice, say, I don't know, ordering a coffee or ordering tapas in a Spanish bar.
So is this like a corrective chatbot as well? Or does it just like, you know, endless conversation back and forth?
So yeah, it does correct things to the extent that it can recognize what you're saying when you're making mistakes or saying something in a slightly different way to what it would expect. It does correct and show you the sort of a version of the sentence that it thinks you meant. I've been personally just enjoying playing around with it and trying it in languages that I'm not so confident in, and just knowing that I'm making a bunch of mistakes, just putting things in and seeing almost like how much will it understand from my gibberish that I'm spitting out in whatever language.
So one thing that I wanted to talk about, which hopefully this doesn't come off as a hard question, but I'm like genuinely curious, is like, as a team that's building a language learning product, you have like certain responsibilities, right? Like to the user, you need to make a product that is effective, but you know, we live in a very attention deprived world. And so it also has to be fun. And I don't want to use the word addicting, but you know, the more users use your app, presumably the better for them and the better for you. So it's like, how do you find the balance between like making a product that is fun and effective and, you know, ultimately something that, you know, is sustainable for you guys?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because something I like to make sure we remind ourselves of sometimes is that it's great to base yourselves in the science and the research, but the science and the research can only tell you so much. And the most effective way to learn a language might not be a particularly enjoyable way for most people to learn a language, right? And so, you know, there's examples of specific like drilling that you can do on pronunciation that will help your pronunciation, but it's like intense, boring, nobody wants to do it. And so finding that balance between what works well, but also what are people going to find enjoyable and want to spend time doing. And in particular with Memrise, obviously doing that within an app, which is something that is still, as an industry, everybody's still kind of working it out as we go, right? So there's a lot of looking at the data of like, is this new feature performing well? Are people using it in the way that we expect? Or doing user testing with people to see like, do they actually enjoy this content or this feature? What do they find confusing? What do they find boring? Or like, where are people dropping off or getting more engaged?
And so is finding that balance like part of your job? Is that like what you do?
To an extent. Yeah. Often that sits more with the kind of the product teams who are looking at the specifics of the design of the features and things. But I work quite a lot with the content. So again, with that, we're looking at what are the pieces of content that people are engaging with. At the moment, we're pulling in various pieces of content from YouTube and TikTok for people to learn with. So it's finding those things that can capture people's interest and that people want to learn, and the kinds of media that people consume on a daily basis anyway, regardless of whether they're learning a language or not, and bringing that into a language learning experience.
Right. And this may be like really in the nitty gritty, but like, what's the simple answer to this question? Like, basically, do you determine the success or failure of a feature? I mean, basically on retention, you like look at the data and say, okay, people are doing this thing in the app for X amount of time, therefore we're meeting our goals. Is that how that works, basically?
Yeah, largely. Yeah, retention. One other thing we like to think about is time at task. We call it in the company, which is essentially how much time are people spending actually using or learning the language with Memrise in general, or with this specific feature. Like, how much time are people spending to it? Because that's one of the key things that, as we were talking about before, this exposure to the language and getting your brain able to process the language at roughly the right level in a way that is compelling and engaging for you. That's what we need. And we need enough of it. You need to spend enough time doing that kind of thing in order for you to develop that skill of processing and speaking the language.
Right, right. I want to go back to something you said, which is, you know, you said something like there were all these like proven methods. Like, if you want to work on pronunciation, there's this boring, effectively proven exercise, right? So, you know, this goes into this idea that there are some quote unquote scientific approaches to language learning. So I want to talk about that a little bit. So what does it mean for a method to be based in science? And, you know, I was just, you know, in preparing for this episode, I saw that Memrise had some feather in its cap on its website, something about our programs use science proven memory techniques. What does that actually mean is my question.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things in there, I think. So we were talking about the difference between knowledge and skill earlier, right? So there's some things that we use that are more to do with that sort of explicit knowledge of, say, words and phrases, so that you can see a word and think a little bit and remember it, recall that word. So there's a bunch of different memory techniques. Memrise was set up by Ed Cook originally, who's a grandmaster of memory and, you know, knows all of these amazing memory techniques that have been proven to work, right? Like, people can train for periods of time with these techniques, and we've integrated some of those into the way the app works. So, for example, using spaced repetition techniques from when you learn a word to then prompt you to review that word and test yourself on that word in certain ways and in different contexts and different ways to help solidify that memory, but then also kind of using the more immersive side of things for you to just process the language and then develop that skill of speaking and understanding from there. And I think, like, one of the things I think is important, again, to kind of maybe repeat myself, is that I think doing our own research, whether that's reading research that's already out there and different theories, which are always relevant to an extent, but it's often hard to extrapolate from a lot of the research that is done in academia, where so much of their focus is on classroom-based teaching. There's more and more being done on online approaches or apps and things like that. But at the moment, I think so much of what we're trying to do is based on the research that comes out elsewhere, but also what are we able to find out ourselves in the process of providing new features for learners and seeing how they engage with them and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. So I am, to be perfectly honest, I haven't really taken a in-person traditional language learning class in my adult life. I did take them in school. Maybe I had bad teachers. Maybe I didn't care as much back then. Some combination of those two things is probably the truth. But they were not very effective. Like, I took a little bit of Spanish and a little bit of Italian, and I can tell you truly, like, nothing from what I learned during those years. However, as an adult, I have used a variety of language learning apps, including Memrise, and my experience personally has been way better, way more effective, way more self-directed. And, you know, now I'm not throwing shade at traditional, like, in-person language learning classes. I'm sure if I took one now, I would be better at it. I'd be a little more selective with my teacher, you know. So I think the overall experience would be better. But regardless of the specifics of my experience, I can say that I have had a superior experience learning languages using apps, which I think might be counterintuitive for some people who have never used a language learning app. So you have some experience in both worlds. What can you say about the pros and cons of either, and maybe a little bit about, again, your personal experience? Yeah, using these two kind of very different methods to achieve the same end.
Yeah, yeah. I would say there's still a place for classroom teaching or learning with a teacher. But I have had a similar experience where I found that when I started taking my language learning into my own hands and thinking or recognizing I actually don't need to learn that, that's a distraction from the stuff that I do need to learn. Because like we were talking about before, it's not just about learning all of those words and grammar rules, which I'm automatically drawn to because I find them super interesting. Like, I love etymology. I love learning different grammatical structures and how people express different things in other languages. But also sometimes allowing myself to just trust the process of, say, watching a bunch of YouTube videos in the language that I'm trying to learn and ignoring the fact that I'm not understanding a bunch of words. I don't need to stop every video every time I don't hear a word, or if I'm reading, I don't need to stop every time I see a word that I don't know and look it up. But trusting the process that if something comes up enough for me to go, yeah, I've heard that before quite a few times and I still don't know what it means, I can then go and look it up. In my language learning, where I think things got a lot more efficient and I felt more able to learn the things that I wanted and needed in a much better, faster way, where I wasn't relying on what the teacher was giving me and telling me that I should be learning. And I think a lot of good teachers will automatically do that. You know, a good teacher will respond to their students' needs. And similarly now with apps, yeah, the industry, I think generally, and Memrise in particular, we're trying to think about how to tailor the experience to individual learners so that they can get some of that experience that has been lacking before in a lot of classroom teaching, partly because if you have a class of 20 people, you have to cater to 20 people, and they might be at different levels, they might have different interests. Well, they will have different interests, definitely. So I think now we're kind of in a slightly unique position to try to kind of tackle that problem that is a really key part of language learning, right? A lot of people don't end up learning a language to the level that they would like to because they lose motivation or because they lose the enjoyment in what they're doing. But if we're able to create a way for people to feel more confident in their language learning and feel more motivated to do it, to spend time doing it every day because they know that it's something that interests them and they don't have to sit down and learn a bunch of words or grammar rules if that's not what they're interested in, then that will be a much more efficient way of learning for the vast majority of people, I think.
Sure. And maybe this goes without saying, but let's say it. When we're learning our first language as kids, we're kind of doing it in this way of, you know, we learn what's useful in an unorganized sort of way until we get to the point of, like, you know, basic working fluency at, you know, whatever age that might be, 6, 7. I mean, I'm no language acquisition expert, but, you know, I feel like at around the age of 6 or 7, you have like a basic working vocabulary that you can communicate in conversation with like any adult that speaks the same language as you. So that kind of brings me maybe to the last thing we can talk about, which is this notion that it's harder to learn a second language as an adult than it is when you're a kid. This is something that probably a lot of people have heard, and I just want you to talk about this a little bit. Like, is it a myth? If it's not a myth, why is it easier for kids to learn second languages, and why is it so hard for adults?
I love this. I get this all the time. I think so many people have this idea that almost that it's not worth learning a language as an adult because you can't learn as well or it's so much harder. And I think, I would say it's mostly a myth, right? There's elements to that that are true, right? Learning a language as a child is easier in certain respects, right? For pronunciation, certainly it's a lot easier. But for children, that's mainly what they do for like the first year or two of their life. They're pretty much only learning to talk and walk and like all of the other things about like life, right?
But right, they don't have full-time jobs.
No, exactly. But we also don't usually expect an adult learner of a language to not say anything for the first year or two, right? Like we have vastly different expectations of children to adults, where it's children's kind of main job to learn to speak and function with other people socially for the first few years of their life, right? Like I live with my sister and my five-year-old nephew and one-year-old niece. And it's super interesting just seeing them speak and learn to talk because they're at very different stages. But my nephew, for example, he's five and he speaks with such confidence, even though he makes grammatical mistakes all the time. He mixes words up and he doesn't care if he's getting it wrong. Whereas most adults already have it ingrained in us that if you say something wrong, you are making a mistake. And that is somehow a reflection on you as a learner, as a person. Whereas kids don't really have this kind of issue around making mistakes. It's their job to just learn and sound like a child again, which as an adult is quite unsettling for people to speak like a child again, which is often the feeling that you get when you're speaking in a language that you're not so confident in.
Yeah, it somehow it feels like a reflection of our innate intelligence or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is ridiculous, right?
Yeah. But there's also things that adults are a lot better at with when it comes to language learning as well. So adults are better at learning vocabulary, partly because we don't also have to learn the concept at the same time. So for example, a child learning the word concept has to get their head around like, what is a concept? It's not something that I can see or touch, right? But we already have that reference point. And so we can just kind of tack onto that and we don't have to spend all of that time working out, well, what does that word actually mean? Which is sometimes a double-edged sword because, you know, words can be used in different ways in different languages, but we have that kind of foundation to build on that children generally don't. Certainly when they're learning their first language.
Yeah. Again, like I said, I'm not a language acquisition expert by any means, but it seems to me that, you know, the social factors that inhibit adults are a greater barrier than any neurological ones.
Definitely.
You know,
definitely.
Well, this has been a great conversation. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for taking the time to come on Words for Granted.
Likewise. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
If you love today's conversation, I'd like to remind you again to consider becoming a supporter at patreon.com/wordsforgranted. It looks like, at least for the time being, I'll be sticking to this interview format of the show. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. You can reach me at wordsforgranted@gmail.com. And also, if you have any ideas for topics or guests, please let me know. All right. I'll catch you next time here at Words for Granted.